Hello and welcome to this Vocalise podcast. I'm Toby Davey, Deputy Director for Vocalise, and in this podcast you'll hear an interview with Maria Oshodi, guide dog owner, artistic director and CEO of Extant, Britain's only professional performing arts company for blind and partially sighted people. When I met up with Maria in the Extant office, I wanted to find out a little bit more about her work as a writer, director, and to find out about her first play, The S-Bend, which was produced as part of the Royal Court's Young Writers Festival in 1994. And I began by asking Maria to tell me a little bit more about Extant and how the name came about.
I was working for an arts organisation called Shape, and just as I was about to leave that organisation, I created as one of my kind of finale arts sort of experiences a exhibition of work by visually impaired painters, and also within the gallery space a programme of visually impaired performers, and it was called The Storyteller, and Jonathan Huxley was one of the artists involved in that, as well as Sally Booth and Terry Miles and people like that. So there are a lot of visually impaired performers that were part of this storytelling experience, you know, and they delivered songs that had a ballad feel, and they delivered monologues and little bits of theatre performances and storytelling and poetry and all sorts of things like this. And it was grand. It went on for 3 weeks and it was very exciting. And then I left Shape and I went on tour in a production. I was actually cast as an actor, which is very unwise because it's not one of my strongest points. But anyway, and I suddenly had this is like a bolt of lightning, this kind of like feeling that, oh my goodness, you know what? There are so many visually impaired actors that I've come across through my work at Shape in those final days, etc., that are so miserable and disgruntled about being visually impaired and being an actor and never getting any work, and that never, you know, some of the, flagship disability companies at the time did cast visually impaired people for some reason or other. And I thought, God, you know, like, I've just come out of this production, which I was very unhappy in as a visually impaired actor. So I had just had that first-hand experience of it myself, even though my background has been in writing, playwriting for theatre. Nevertheless, I had this experience of being a visually impaired performer, and then I'd also had all this experience of arts management within Shape, and I thought, I'm going to put those two things together. And at the time, the Arts Council were doing all this like little sort of start-up bits of money for emerging companies and things. It was all very cool and groovy. This is obviously pre-2008. And so we kind of applied for some of that money as a small group, an unconstituted group. But in order to get that money, we had to call ourselves something. And I remember we had our first inaugural meeting, and one of the actors sitting around the table came up with this idea, and I said, what do we call ourselves? And he said, well, what about Extant? And we all turned around and looked at him, what on earth does that mean? And he said, well, it means, you know, it's the opposite of extinct. It means still survives. We're here, you know. And I thought, oh, right, yeah, cool. That's it then.
I suppose your theatrical career sort of goes back a bit further. Your first play, The S-Bend, was part of the Young Writers Festival at the Royal Court, I think in 1984. What was it like having your first play performed on the stage of the Royal Court?
It was a complete culture shock. I mean, I'm from a working class family and none of my family are involved in the arts in any way. So this thing about writing and performance has just come out of the blue, really. I grew up on a council estate, and one of my friends, who was no longer living on the estate, she'd moved down to Hazelmere and was picking apples. I found out about this Royal Court Writers Festival, and I said, I'm going to write something. And she said, I'm going to write something too. So we both submitted, and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of young people submitted that year from across the country. And they selected both of our plays, just, you know, completely randomly. So we were both involved in this festival, and it was great in a way because it meant that somebody from my background as well was also part of this experience, you know, and we're still friends now, donkey's years on, and we're still work in theatre, and, you know, I think that experience was, you know, really sort of seminal for us in our evolution. My play was adopted by one of the directors at the Royal Court, who was very dedicated to developing young people, a man called David Sulkin, who then became my mentor, I suppose. And it was just fascinating working with somebody who took your work seriously. You know, this play, which I remember once Hanif Qureshi saying in an interview that you know, why did he begin writing? He said, well, it was because it was, he didn't feel like he had a voice, and he was quite isolated, and it was like slipping notes under a door. And I thought that was a great way of describing it, because that's kind of how it felt, in the way I wanted to say something about my experience that I hadn't really seen reflected anywhere before. This is like as a mixed heritage person, like I've come from a Nigerian English background, and I wanted to say something about being a young person growing up in that kind of way that I didn't feel at the time was being sort of said. And there was this institution and this person, big grown-up person, who's taking my work seriously. And we had actors and stage and resources and publicity and an audience. And I think that feeling that I had at the time has never left me, really, where I'm a bit like a rabbit caught in the headlights sometimes. I think, is this really happening to me? I'm just waiting for the facade to all start falling down around me. And I'm still waiting. And this is like 20-something years later.
Obviously, Extant is a company that's for and made up of blind and partially sighted performers, actors, etc. And obviously, access to theatre, to productions, is part of Extant and part of the performance and everything else. Why is access so important, and to include it in the production as well?
As a visually impaired theatre practitioner, I'm also the visually impaired audience. If I can't have access to what's happening in theatre, then I'm not getting that level of input into how the ecology, you know, of what's out there, I'm not getting access to it. And so that kind of, it stunts my ability to be able to sort of respond and absorb and to recreate. So that's on a personal level. That's why I also, generally in terms of diversity and inclusion, it's very important that everybody in society has got the opportunity to access theatre and performance. You know, the arts are seen as something that are one of the, at the moment particularly, you know, one of the drivers of the economy, because, you know, the cultural industries are thriving so much, and there is so much creativity in this country. If we're divorced from that because we don't know what's going on, then we're just excluded from either appreciating that or maybe getting involved in other kinds of ways, you know, around employment or just using those things as reference, you know, reference points.
Extant recently celebrated 15 years with the production Cheer. What have been the highlights so far over those 15 years?
In terms of shows, I mean, there was Resistance, obviously, in 2005, which was the first professional all-visually impaired cast of a play about a blind French resistance leader, Jacques Lusseron, who resisted the Nazi occupation of Paris back in the Second World War. We've toured international visually impaired performers and companies, like an African-American actor called Lynn Manning in his one-man show, and also the Croatian visually impaired theatre company that have been going for nearly 70 years in Zagreb, called New Life, Novi Zivot to be precise. They have a festival actually every 2 years in Zagreb, to which a lot of international visually impaired theatre companies go. And then Sheer, that we did in 2012, was this comedy burlesque horror show, which involved a lot of subversive burlesque acts that were performed by visually impaired actors, all about sexuality and visual impairment, and how that was all sort of warped and sent up through the kind of art of burlesque.
Resistance possibly was a highlight because it toured, it got great reviews. Lynn Gardner from The Guardian did a great review of it. You know, it went to Paris and everything else. From the director's and writer's point of view, was it difficult translating somebody's novel, somebody's story into a production? And, you know, sort of, what was that a difficult process, or was it easier because you almost, I suppose, had an affinity with the main character, being, you know, having problems with their eyesight?
I'd never done an adaptation before of a book, and yes, I had an affinity with Jacques Lusseron. I even took myself to Paris to do some research on some of the places that he talked about in the book, and that was very moving, because some of the places that he'd mentioned in the book, I mean, I went in 2001, and the descriptions of them that were written in the 50s, recounting what was there in the 1940s, they're still there. you know, shops that you would think, you know, if it was in London, they'd be gone, changed into, I don't know, Chinese takeaways. But now, they're still in Paris. So that's one thing about the French. They do preserve everything. I was so respectful of him as a person and wanted to recount his story authentically. I sort of just did this boring, episodic first draft of it, of this book, and it was just so flat and undynamic and untheatrical. And I remember the director I was working with at the time said, you really need to change this. You need to look for some central pivotal moment in the story, revolve everything around that. I thought, oh my god, actually, you know, rather than starting at the beginning, what's the thing, what is this thing? And I thought, oh god, it's when he gets arrested by the Gestapo. He spends these few days being interrogated by this Nazi major who can't believe this guy is blind, who they've arrested as this kind of leader of this resistance cell, and has got a report, obviously, that one of the resistance members has been a spy and has been reported. So he's got this report that details and obviously incriminates all of them, and he just reads from this report endlessly, and he keeps on interrogating him about these, some of the members that are still obviously haven't been rounded up, and still, and he's questioning about whether he really is blind and all that. And I thought, that's what I need to use as the central focus. So that's the whole play is predicated on that interview that he has. And then within it, there are all these flashbacks to lots of different things. And then, sort of, I say 2/3 of the way through the play, the interview finishes. He gets turfed, like carted off to Buchenwald. And then the last third of the play is in Buchenwald concentration camp, where he spends 15 months. I sort of parallel that with what happened at the beginning of his life. And what happened at the beginning of his life was all about when he lost his sight almost overnight at the age of 8, and suddenly how he accessed all this sort of internal sort of, I suppose, awareness and freedom. So going blind for him was not a trauma, it was a liberation. And so I parallel that experience with being interned in this concentration camp. So you're juxtaposing freedom with incarceration. Yes, and but the freedom has come through blindness. And then at the end, I kind of bring both of these things together. So his absolute euphoria losing his sight is connected right at the very end of the play with him being liberated from the concentration camp.
What do you personally get out of running the company, working with other blind and partially sighted performers, putting on productions like Resistance? What's it for you? What do you get out of it?
Get paid. I mean, it is hard work. You know, it's very, very hard work. There's often, I would say, 80% of the time is spent in the back room, trying to create and develop and find funds for projects. You know, what you see eventually on stage. And that's why, in a way, I suppose it looks like we've done a handful of stuff over all these years, because, you know, with a staff base of two people who aren't full time, you know, it takes time to develop all the stuff. We haven't got an army of people who are working, you know, in the back room for us. We're all doing it sort of, you know, on very minimal resources. So, but eventually, when we do get something that comes to fruition, it's incredibly rewarding. To be employing visually impaired people, to be saying something that's different than nobody else is saying, and to be doing it to audiences that are saying, wow, this is amazing, I've never seen anything, experienced anything like this before, and I'm going to tell my friends, and you've changed my perception, and I didn't think, you know what I mean? All of that is really, it's worth hearing. And it also, for me, it makes me feel like I'm doing that thing from the early days of still validating my experience artistically. I'm still exploring and engaged with working out, I suppose, what it meant for me to lose my, so what's it all about? You know, should I have stopped being a creative because I couldn't see anymore? I don't think so.
What would you say to encourage other blind or partially sighted people who are thinking of getting involved in the performing arts, whether that's as a performer or director or writer or being behind the scenes?
Look on the Extant website and see if there's anything that we're offering that can help and support you. Get in contact with us and tell us what it is you want to do. Send us your CV. Yep, that's a good place to start. What can I say? Just keep at it. Believe, meet other visually impaired people. You get a tower of strength working with other visually impaired people. You know, it's really cool. Try and find what your USP is, your unique selling point. What is it? You know, you're not just going to be visually impaired. You're going to have, like, a incredibly unique position in this world being you. How do you combine those things? How do you make them say something that's not only meaningful to you but to other people as well? Study as well. Study your art. Don't be lazy. Don't think you're just going to be some 15-minute celeb, you know, I don't know what, X Factor nonsense person. Be a consummate artist.
What's next? What's on the horizon for you next end?
What's next? Well, it looks like we will be touring a new show in the spring by a Hungarian-French writer who wrote the play in the 50s. And what extent are going to do with this piece is to create access that will be delivered through the soundscape. So we'll be working with a blind sound designer who we worked with before, who's fantastic, and we'll be creating access for our audience, which also is an artistic interpretation of the piece. So it's not only acting as some bolt-on thing, but it's also integral to the way that I'm sort of interpreting this play, which is great because it kind of gives it a really extant house style in its production.
Do visit the extant website at www.extant.org.uk to find out more about their performances, projects, and to get involved with their work. To find out more about Vocalise Audio Describe performances, availability of description in museums, galleries and heritage sites, do visit our website at www.vocalise.co.uk. Vocalise is a charity funded by Arts Council England, and this podcast has been produced by Toby Davey.